Totally Football Show, rounding up all the best in football and Arsenal. Anfield, with reaction to Liverpool's 4-0 victory, with Klopp resting Mignolet and Wenger resting Karius. And the big question, if Arsenal is increasingly the Premier League's Theresa May, is Sanchez their Kim Jong-il? He wants to go ballistic but is let down by his Arsenal, and now his career is in real trouble. Elsewhere, there's time to check on Chelsea, Man United and your team, probably. Salute West Ham's village people. Plenty of cowboys, but very little construction. And De Boos for De Boer. Plus, Mbappe to Paris, more FFS than FFP. Ousmane Dembele, Football League and more. It's the Totally Football Show. Everybody ready? Then let's begin. Hello, listeners. Coming to you today from our new home at Jazz FM. Nothing to do with the mags, but quite an exciting lineup here. We've got Michael Cox.
Hello.
You're a jazz fan, Michael?
Not particularly, no, but I'm willing to be convinced.
We might be turning you with these canoodlings in the background. Also here, Lero Rosenia. You're a jazz fan, Lero?
My dad was a big jazz fan, so yeah, I listened to a lot of it, but I didn't really get into it, but it evokes memories of my childhood.
All right. Ian McIntosh, you're enjoying this funky noodlings.
Never really been into jazz.
Have you not?
No, been blues curious, but never really into jazz, but I'm willing to be turned.
Okay. And what about you, Julien Laurent? Bonjour.
Bonjour, monsieur.
I can imagine you with a black turtleneck and a little espresso in the hand.
No.
A beret.
Yes, but no jazz.
Oh.
No, sorry.
All right, then. Hey, if Arsenal were a jazz artiste, what would they be?
I just told you I know nothing about jazz. So I have no idea.
We'll talk about Arsenal later on, but you were perplexed by the broadsheet ratings, the ratings given to players in some of the kind of more august journals this Monday morning.
If you are going to do it and you expect people to buy your newspaper, if they haven't watched a game, they read the ratings, and the ratings should reflect the game that they've missed, for example.
Right. Yeah.
So if you read ratings for Arsenal this morning, for example, and you see Peter Cech 6, Monreal 6, Koscielny 6, no one has under 5, which is it's out of 10, so 5 being the
average.
The moyen,
I mean,
French.
The average.
And you only have one player who is Granit Xhaka, 4 out of 10. You would think, oh, okay, they didn't play well, but maybe they got a draw, maybe they got a last winner.
Right.
They got battered 4-0.
How
is that possible?
If we talk about jazz artists, Arsenal, he'd be Shaka Khan.
Yeah. I get you, yeah.
I'm going with the whole team would
this
be
one.
Mingus as
can
well.
Take this one up, yeah.
Okay, just to give a contrast, and this is in no way something you mentioned already, Sunday night, an extraordinary match down in the Principality where Olympic Marseille visited Monaco, and Monaco absolutely handed Marseille their backside, 6-1. What were the ratings for the Marseille players there?
In L'Equipe, 2 Marseille players at 1 out of 10. But because they were dreadful. If you're bad, why would you put them 5 out of 10? So they had 2 at 1 out of 10. I think 4 at 2 out of 10. A couple of 3s. 1-4 for Thauvin because he scored the goal for Marseille. Mm. And that was it. 4 out of 10 was the highest rating for the Marseille team, which were very similar to the Arsenal team, the way they got beaten by Monaco. How come 4 is the lowest for Arsenal in English newspapers?
As far as I'm aware, the British press do their ratings out of 10 at half time, or maybe very, very early into the second half.
Really?
And it's always been the strangest thing. It's the first thing the players look at to see how they've been rated. And it is like the point of least priority for all journalists in England. It's the thing you don't even want to do.
If it's the first thing that players look at, is that one of the reasons why journalists in this country tend to avoid giving absolute hammerings there?
Quite possibly.
But then it's unfair on your readers then. Because, like I said, they buy your newspaper and it doesn't reflect whatsoever.
Julian?
What happened again?
Good job this podcast has no affiliation to any newspaper, I would say.
Free at last, Michael. Free. Yeah. At last. I can see we're going to have to talk about Arsenal and their trip to Liverpool. I can see we're also going to be talking about Mbappe and that amazing deal that PSG have put together, which seems to have got them around the whole financial fair play issue. Much, much coming up in today's Totally Football Show. And we'll start at Anfield after this. What a match then Sunday afternoon at Anfield. 4-0 Liverpool beating Arsenal. Incredible and yet not. Michael, did you experience that thing of not quite believing what you were seeing, even though you'd seen it many times before?
Yeah, I think Arsenal were much worse than anyone could have reasonably expected. But Liverpool started at an incredible tempo, and I thought that they were very impressive. The way their front three all got on the score sheet, and then Sturridge came off the bench and got a goal for himself. I mean, if you combine that with a performance against Hoffenheim in midweek, Liverpool are just playing some fantastic stuff. I think they've moved beyond just breaking up the opposition's play, which they did very well as soon as Klopp arrived. And they're now just a really devastating counter-attacking side. And the goal that was scored by Sturridge, I thought, was the kind of goal Arsenal used to score, you know, in their Invincibles era, just one end of the pitch to the other. Fantastic goal, great teamwork. So they're looking very good.
They are looking good. What was your favourite moment?
I think the moment where it became apparent that something extraordinary was going to happen was Sadio Mane, who's got this thing when the ball gets played in sort of behind him, he can somehow, without breaking stride, hook a leg out and kind of whip it in front of him and then continue without losing momentum. And it was about 8 or 9 minutes in, and he got it all wrong, and he couldn't quite get the ball, and he came off balance, and all the speed went out of him. And then he had time and space to get the ball, get it back in front of him, and then run into space. And it was like, lads, that's their best player. That's an opportunity to... What's happening here?
Yeah.
It was, even by Arsenal standards, so, so bad.
That Mane goal from the Arsenal corner was just a... And there were some lovely counter-attacking goals this weekend, but that was a particularly fine one. I also enjoyed Gary Neville self-combusting on commentary.
But that's the thing. Usually the strength for Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher is that they watch it and they see things that maybe you don't see. But in this instance, everybody could see the horror show that was the complete lack of Arsenal midfield.
Mm.
I was watching the game, and every time Liverpool attacked, I thought they were going to score. And every time Arsenal attacked, I thought Liverpool were going to score. And as a player or a manager, there are levels where you don't want to go in terms of performance. One is pathetic. The second is embarrassing. And the third is pathetically embarrassing. And that's where Arsenal were. They were pathetically embarrassing. And you looked at their five strung across the back. Not one of them wanted to mark anybody. Not one of them wanted to take any responsibility. And the moment for me, which suggested to me that this was going to be a bad day, is when Salah got on the far post and missed that absolute sitter. You're thinking, well, this is supposed to be two teams in the top four. Do you think that would happen with Man United, that they'd have a sitter from 3 yards inside the first 10 or 15 minutes? And I knew it was going to be a disastrous day, as Arsene Wenger described it.
Had Liverpool not got their second right before half-time, I think there would have been a very reasonable case to say that Liverpool should be the more disappointed of the two. Yeah. If they'd only gone in 1-0 up after that half, it was stunning.
With that final score, a lot of people getting very excited about Liverpool. Dewey, for example, saying, with 7 clean sheets in our last 9 Premier League games, are Liverpool now title contenders? Is that just the sort of thing that happens when a top six side plays Arsenal?
Let's compare it to the performance against Crystal Palace, where Benteke missed a sitter, where Palace could easily come away from the points, and then Liverpool go and play Arsenal, a team that want to attack and want to go and express themselves. Now, next week, Liverpool could draw against West Brom or no disrespect, or Stoke, because that's where we are. We're 3 games into the season. No one should be getting carried away in terms of Liverpool. Yes, they started off brilliantly. Mane looks outstanding. It's a long old season, but we should be getting carried away regarding Arsenal, because it's something that we've seen before. As you said, James, it wasn't a surprise. You know, we've seen them get beat 8. You know, Arsenal could go on and win the next 3 or 4. But I was texting an Arsenal supporter, and the words that came out was, "I am genuinely heartbroken," from an Arsenal supporter. And that's where they are at the moment. Within 3 games of the season, he's broken a lot of Arsenal fans' hearts.
All right, Julien, a quick question here, because Arsene saying afterwards that wasn't the time to get emotional post-game. I think a lot of people, you know, Gary Neville among them, certainly were getting emotional, and clearly Leroy's friend as well. Billy Zakiri says, what will it take, or what would it take for Wenger to leave before the end of his contract?
I can't see that happening for his own ego, which is quite big, like all big managers, I think. It's a tricky one because he doesn't see things like everybody else. Otherwise, he would have left after winning the FA Cup. But in his mind, it's different. He still thinks he can take this club, this team forwards. You know, he will still see mistakes like the Bellerin one on the third goal, thinking, well, you know, if we don't do those kind of mistakes, we don't concede those goals, etc. Where, in a way, the lack of aggression, for example. My 8-year-old son was watching with me, And after 5 minutes, he said, why are Liverpool winning all the second balls? And he knew already. And I said, well, wait, that it's going to get worse and worse. Because, and even at 8 years old, he already identified the problem and said, like, but if you don't win the second balls, you're not going to win the game because you give them far too much space. And it was embarrassing. And I was like, oh, man. I think there's obviously, clearly, there's something broken between, I think, Wenger and some of the players.
Right.
But he's not either on the pitch. I think, you know, every manager, before you go to a game, whatever the level, we say, you need to win the challenges, you need to win the second balls, on the third balls. But if they don't do it, do you see what I mean? It's not,
yeah, no,
it's not
him to do it. I get it. Is that young Rafa?
Yes, young Rafa, indeed.
Young Rafa, Laurent. Amazing. Michael, you got anything to add?
No, can I just say I used to play football with the guy who asked that question, Billy Zakaria, but I haven't seen him for about 20 years. So
he's probably aged considerably in the meantime.
Probably. Can I just make another
point?
Obviously, it's not a surprise that Arsenal have done this because they have kind of done it repeatedly over the years. But the team that played yesterday was almost exactly the same team that won the FA Cup final against Chelsea. And that was a really controlled, impressive performance against the side who had won the league, where they completely outplayed Chelsea. And tactically, they really got that game spot on. So I think to go from that to this within three competitive games is really quite startling. And I think it's more of an issue than the fact that they've done
this thing
before.
So what is the difference then?
Well, I don't know. I mean, on paper, there was very little difference. I mean, this team was actually better. Koscielny was in the side. Mm. He's their best defender. Cech was in the side. He's their best goalkeeper. They switched the wing-backs. Otherwise, it was the same team. And I think that points to the fact that two or three players, at least, were not there mentally.
Who?
Well, I mean, the three players who supposedly have been angling for a move away are Sanchez and Ozil and Oxlade-Chamberlain. None of whom I thought were the biggest culprits in the defeat.
Would you point at Granit Xhaka, no tackles all game, and the wonderful Welshman? What's his name?
Aaron Ramsey.
Aaron Ramsey, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're both good players, but they were just getting themselves so far ahead of the ball again and again. And in any system, that's asking for trouble. But the fact is, Arsenal playing 3-3 at the back. So every time one Liverpool midfielder broke past, they were 4-on-3, which is exactly what happened for the Mane goal. Hmm. When Oxlade-Chamberlain was left with a decision about whether to shut down a central midfielder or shut down Mane, and kind of did neither, but he was in an impossible situation.
I thought this performance was compounded by, I mean, I watched a lot of Premier League games, you know, over the weekend, and I watched the performance of Isaac Hayden at Newcastle. Now, I don't think Isaac Hayden is the greatest of footballers, but he's been in that Arsenal system for so long. He's gone to Newcastle, gone to the Championship. He came into that Newcastle side. He got about the pitch. He tackled. He was strong. He was powerful. He really looked like he cared. And then I looked at people like Gabriel, who's gone. Mustafi is on his way out. Elneny, we don't see him. Perez is going to be gone. All these players that they signed, Lacazette on the bench, and you've got a young player, Arsenal player, who is 6'3", strong, is powerful, and he's got heart. And that Arsenal side didn't seem to have any heart for me. And I think it was compounded by his performance as well.
Klopp's decision to go with Karius instead of Mignolet excited a lot of comment. Does this just mean the Arsenal fixture is like the League Cup for them now, that they play their reserve keepers? Also, what do we think that Cologne, Bati Borisov and Red Star Belgrade are going to do to Arsenal in the Europa League?
It's going to use it as a League Cup, if you want, I think. So, actually, the one who didn't play, like some that Leroy mentioned, like Elneny and, you know, people like that, Coquelin would surely have tackled more than Xhaka, Ramsey, Oxlade-Chamberlain all together. So maybe that actually it's going to be better than the team that, you know, is playing in the league those kind of big games. But it could be. And remember on the first Totally Football show, we said the one club where it could get toxic very, very, very quickly, more than Palace, is Arsenal. And we said at the time, if they don't start well, it's going to get so toxic that it's going to be unbearable for fans, probably for Wenger, although he has that bubble around him somehow and had for so many years, and the players. But it's crazy. And now imagine going on international break. All the French, for example, we go there, we get slaughtered by all the rest of the French dressing room, who's going to take the mick out of them all week. Same with the English boys, probably. And then they're going to come back in 10 days' time, or a bit less than 10 days' time, still feeling like, oh, we've heard about this game all along during the international break. And it's just the wrong thing possible.
Just on that, then the French lads, I like Danny Welbeck. I think he's a great lad. I think he's got a great attitude. But he must have been surprised that he was picked as well. Giroud was on the bench, Lacazette was on the bench, and Welbeck up front. Now, he's been injured. I know what he gives you, but you know when he gets an opportunity, there's more chance that he needs three or four, doesn't he, to score. You just paid £46 million for a striker. You've just given the French international striker a new contract. You're playing Liverpool at Anfield and they're both sat on the bench. It's nonsensical.
I was told that it was for Welbeck to run in behind, which is fine because he has pace probably more than Lacazette and certainly more than Giroud. But anyway, if you don't play that ball in behind anyway, it's not going to go anywhere. And yesterday, they hardly did it at all. And Lacazette, you signed him and you feel that he doesn't run in behind enough. But you knew exactly what kind of player he was when you signed him, because that's not the way he was playing at Lyon or for France when he played for France. So it's weird that you spend that money on a player with a profile that is not really then what you want for those big kind of games.
Yeah, c'est fou. Vachement fou. Just to finish this section, back to Liverpool. How far can they go? Is this a different looking Klopp side? Michael, you mentioned how amazing they've looked in back-to-back games. Great against Hoffenheim and this awesome performance. What do we think they could achieve this year?
I think it'll be very exciting, and they're certainly going to challenge for the Champions League places. I still worry about the defence. And even though it's been kind of brushed over, that goalkeeper situation is very odd. And, I mean, Karius didn't have a shot to save and was still Liverpool's worst player. I mean, you know, he's a good goalkeeper. But it was just astonishing. And, you know, with a different result, I think that kind of goalkeeping question would... it just puts both goalkeepers in a difficult situation, I think.
Do you think there's something behind this, or do you go with Klopp's explanation that with three games in a week, he wanted to give Mignolet a rest?
I find that explanation very odd. At a guess, I would think maybe there's some kind of personal reasons that he's making an excuse for.
Right.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Okay. Has Sanchez played his last game for Arsenal?
To go where? Who's going to... Like, that's the problem. He wants to go, fair enough. But if no one comes with a good offer, which no one has so far, and if he keeps wanting 400,000 a week, which that's what he asked for PSG, for example, no one's going to ever pay that for him.
400,000 a week?
Yeah, which is like, it's just crazy. Even for PSG standards, it's crazy. They said to him, really? Just go back to London then.
Should start his own football club. Work for me.
Yeah, that worked for me. So no, I think he's going to stay. And I think that could be the worst that could happen for both Arsenal and Alexis Sanchez.
All right. How far are Liverpool going to go, Ian McIntosh?
No, I still don't trust him.
Okay. All right. Let's have a bit of music and talk about Spurs.
Tweet us at The Totally Show and find us on Facebook and at thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Last Thursday on The Totally Football Show, we, like probably many other people, said, okay, fine, there probably isn't a Wembley hoodoo, but if they didn't beat Burnley there, maybe there is. And they didn't, Michael Cox.
Yeah, I mean, the hoodoo clearly doesn't exist, but the longer they don't win, the more people start talking about the hoodoo. I think the more it becomes a psychological issue.
Yeah. The Italians have a phrase, it's not true, but I believe it. And I think that sums up the Wembley situation. And it's in their heads, isn't it? I mean, you know all about jinxes. You are, a walking jinx, Ian, with the best will in the world.
This is very true, though I suspect it's more about just not having another option if it's not happening for Harry Kane.
Okay, but they didn't. They're in the same situation that they were in last year at White Hart Lane. Here's Johnny Blaine, big Spurs fan, with a stat. They conceded 5 points, or they dropped 5 points at home in all of last season. They've already dropped five in this, in two home matches. So, you know, something's happening there. And if that wasn't enough, this August Harry Kane thing continues to roll on.
I think the big thing is they're not playing at home, they're playing at Wembley. It's a neutral ground and it's a cup final for every side that goes there. And it's no coincidence that Chelsea scored after 90 minutes and Burnley scored after 90 minutes, because that's what Wembley does to teams when they go there. They are highly motivated, and the team talk for any manager in that dressing room is going to play it like a cup final. And that's what Spurs are up against.
All right. Speaking of which, actually, Alistair Naismith with a very interesting point. He says, if Spurs reach the semis of the FA or League Cup, will they hold them away from Wembley, as that is no longer technically a neutral ground for them? Brackets, and will this therefore be to their advantage?
This, I think, it's a big disadvantage. Not only that for the opposition, but I think throughout the season, when you played at Wembley, any player would tell you Wembley takes it out of you. And the way that Spurs play, the intensity with which they play, to play there every 2 weeks as the season goes on with Champions League football and cup football, is going to take its toll.
Why does it take it out of you, Lira?
Because mentally, it's such it's an iconic place. The new Wembley is an iconic place, so mentally, it's just draining. Your energy is sapped before you even go out on the pitch. And to deal with that every 2 weeks is going to be tough. They've also got a chairman who likes to deal, and so he'll be dealing down to the last second of the transfer window. And when they should have got players in to just give the players, I'm not saying it would have changed the starting 11, but it would have given those players a boost, and it would have given them some options. But they'll get their players in, but they'll get them in late. And I think that's a big disadvantage.
Julian, speaking of getting players in, Serge Aurier is the shot name, apparently, on Spurs' wish list. That's a surprising choice, given his recent history at Paris Saint-Germain. Kevin Carway-Chan says, could you ask, Julian, exactly how problematic it'll be having a character like Serge Aurier in a dressing room as tight as Spurs?
So that's the paradox is, he's a great guy in the dressing room. He's a great guy. Until he smokes the shisha on Periscope, starting insulting everyone. But if that doesn't get to that, he's a great guy in the dressing room. That's the thing. A lot of the PSG players loved him.
He also had a two-month suspended jail sentence?
So, yeah, for having a fight with a policeman outside a nightclub in Paris. He could be problematic. I still think he has flaws as a football player.
Right.
I think he has a lot of flaws as a human being. But if you coach him well, maybe, if you give him some time, if you work hard with him, I'm not sure how Pochettino is ready for that, but I think he has great potential. There's no doubt about that, and he's still very young.
He's full-back, yeah?
Yeah, right-back.
Right-back.
You can play a left-back, and you can also play centre-back as well. Mm. So he's a really interesting player. The thing is, he, that year in Paris, which was different because he's a Paris kid, all the councillors that he grew up with, which is a really, really rough one, were at his house every night. Hence the shisha, hence the periscope, hence the like. In here, it might be different because he's far from all of that circus, if you see what I mean. Right. So, let's see.
Okay, Burnley, meantime, another fabulous performance away for them and down in London. The victory to open the season up at Chelsea. And this saw some standout showings from Heaton and new signing Chris Wood.
Yeah, they seem to be trying to assemble a team entirely made up of bulky target men at the moment. But hell, it's working. 4 points away from home. I think that's probably not far off what they managed all of last season.
Very nice. Stoke visited West Brom and managed an exciting draw there as well. 1-1. Jay Rodriguez with the West Brom goal. Crouchy.
I have to take exception to the word exciting there, James.
It
was a 1-1 draw.
Were you there?
Well, I was very much there in spirit. I watched it.
Yeah.
Tell you what, though, it was good to see Ollie Burke in Premier League football, albeit for just 4 minutes. So he's probably a player that a lot of people have read about and maybe haven't seen a lot. He's an extraordinary prospect, and he's very big, very fast, absolute beast, proper monster, but intelligence-wise, kind of way off.
Which sounds a bit rough to say that, but that was very much the view at Red Bull Leipzig.
Well, Red Bull, they called him a blank hard drive, which was a really poetic way of saying that there's not much going on in there. You do wonder how that's going to go with Tony Pulis, who is very much repetition. You will perform this specific role every second you're out there. But if he can unlock it...
That would suit him,
exactly,
though.
That's the best,
well, I hope
best
so.
Thing for a blank hard drive.
Exactly. No, really. The way Hasenhüttl plays at RB Leipzig is far more complicated than what Pulis asks for his players.
The concern is that at some point he'll switch off. Or go into standby mode, maybe.
Right.
And then get the mother and father of all rollickings.
Okay.
But hell of a player if he progresses.
Oliver Burke. Also very good on Sunday with Chelsea at home to Everton.
Yes, no, they're excellent. Morata, I think, has settled very well. He's got 2 goals and 2 assists so far, and they've all been with his head. The goals and the assists.
Is that right?
Very neat.
That's their centre-forward signing. The kind of thing that Everton need to come up with. Because they've spent lots of money, but as many people pointed out, not spent it on replacing the man who scored them, 25 goals last season?
Yeah, I think they were badly lacking pace yesterday. They didn't have much on the counter-attack and just didn't really have much of a route to goal. I think playing Rooney and Sigurdsson in those kind of floating roles is, two very good players, very talented players, but they definitely need someone going in behind if they're playing those two.
You're absolutely right. With Sigurdsson and Rooney, no pace. They need somebody running in behind. That's why they've been linked with Jamie Vardy as an option, because I think if they had Jamie Vardy, Calvert-Lewin will play up front. He's not a wide player, he's a front man. I think that would kind of round the squad out. I think Koeman would be very happy if he could get a Jamie Vardy through.
Wow, yeah, I would imagine so. Mm. Everton, anyway, qualifying for the group stages of the compact and pity Europa League, where they'll be taking on Atalanta, Apollon Limassol out of Cyprus, and Lyon. We're going to have a big focus on the Europa League and Champions League group stages in Thursday's Totally Football Show, which, Julian, you'll be giving us your thoughts in that. That's something I'm certainly looking forward to. Chelsea, meanwhile, have got Roma, Atletico Madrid and Karabag. Whew. Chelsea, after that initial crisis and some rash talk of Conte going by October 21st, now looking absolutely bang solid.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Conte doesn't seem particularly happy with the lack of transfer activity. I think his mood hasn't particularly changed, but they're still a very organised side and they're still going to get results.
Is he unhappy because they've been linked with Oxlade-Chamberlain? Because they have. Is that a perplexing suggestion?
I think that's one of the few things he's pleased about, actually.
Oh, really?
Chamberlain, yeah.
Okay, good. Good. Transfer window closes Thursday at midnight, so more on that to come later in the week. Next up on the Totally Football Show, it's the Mancunian candidates. Listeners, if you want your face to be as smooth as the sounds here at our new home, Jazz FM, then you need to noodle on to cornerstone.co.uk pronto. Cornerstone, take all the hassle out of shaving. Let them know how often you defuzz and sign up to one of their plans and you'll never have to worry about running out of blades ever again. They'll deliver them right to your door. To get you started, head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally and you'll receive a personally engraved razor and 6 super sharp blades for just £4. That's cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Nice. Hey, how about those Manchester clubs, Leroy? Mm-hmm. Very different beasts, though. United are kind of Terminator-esque machine, though. Whereas Man City, a little bit more of a kind of flight of fancy.
Absolutely. I enjoyed the game, Bournemouth-Man City. Bournemouth, great goal, Charlie Daniels, and people keep saying it's goal of the season, but I think they've gone too early, in all honesty. But
On that goal, Tally says, for Ian, does the Bournemouth goal count for an asymmetrical Thunder Bastard?
Yes, it does.
Mark Wallace, a strike so good Maggie Thatcher would try and break it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's well done, isn't it? Yeah. That was an extraordinary goal, though. Let's just stop and talk about you. Oh, crikey, you were there at the Vitality Stadium. What did you do, Ian? Did you drop your bovril? Possibly.
Has been known. No, I mean, there's convention in the press box that you're not really allowed to, you know, react to stuff in any way. But I'm afraid I did let some words slip away because it was just such a ferocious, gorgeous shot. It was still accelerating and still rising when it went past Edison, who, bless him, had he got a hand to it, would have ripped it off at the wrist. Which I don't think anyone wanted to see.
Nobody wants that. What made you choose Bournemouth-Man City for your game this weekend, Ian?
Well, I don't really get to choose. I get assigned. But I did actually suggest that I could do that one because it looked like it was going to be a nice game of football.
I mean, it certainly was.
Two teams passing. But it was really interesting that Eddie Howe shifted from his usual shape to try and pack everyone into the middle to try and stop where he figured Man City were going to be coming. And then Man City changed their shape to try and get more out on the wings. So you basically had two sets of players coming out at the first whistle and not sort of slowly realising that all of their preparation had gone to waste. So it was always going to be, you know, quite important who settled first. And it was Bournemouth by some distance. I have to hold my hand up. I mean, I think I did it on New Year's Eve when he scored against Swansea, but I had put Josh King into the bucket marked quick but crap. But some of the moments that he had on the ball, particularly in the first 20 minutes, the close control and the forethought, he's really looking good now. So much better than I've seen him, you know, in all the times I've seen him since he first popped up. I really like Bournemouth. I know they've got no points and they're going to sit for 2 weeks at the bottom of the table looking up, but there's so much about them. I think they're going to be absolutely fine.
Right. And a heartbreaking finish because they looked like they were going to get their first point until Sterling popped up with the winner. What was it, sort of 97th minute?
Yeah, 97th minute opening paragraph ruining bastard of a goal. Caught a little bit of a deflection, looped into the top corner. And then, of course, what followed I believe the PFA are calling for an investigation,
which
is very much required.
Well, there's two elements here. One is the red card for Raheem Sterling for running, for basically going into the crowd, but he actually didn't. The crowd had come onto the pitch, and he was only a couple of yards off the touchline.
Charlie Daniels did exactly the same thing, and Mike Dean didn't do anything about it then. But it's interesting that Pep kind of... people are saying he's like the new Sir Alex Ferguson, because he's the one who got the extra time, because he was moaning about Bournemouth time wasting. The fourth official called Mike Dean over. They had a chat for 4 minutes, and that's why there was so much extra time anyway. So it kind of worked. It worked for him. But I think that's absolutely ridiculous to book Raheem Sterling. I defy anybody who's been playing a football match in the Premier League who's been kicked by Harry Arter, by the way, in the last 5 minutes, having a right old ding-dong, to score the winning goal and not lose your head. Which I mean, Raheem's is very surprised when he hits a target these days, isn't he, to be honest? let's be honest. So to get the winning goal, I defy anybody. And some common sense would have come in really handy, like the common sense he used when Charlie Daniels scored an amazing goal and went into the crowd. So, and then what happened with Aguero afterwards, again, was just really spoil a very, very good game.
So the Aguero business, the fans had spilled out across the kind of boundary onto the turf with that last-minute winner for City. And a couple of stewards were really manhandling one City fan who was down, face down in the turf, and they had his arms behind his back. They were getting him in a kind of half-Nelson. What happens then, Ian?
Well, it's actually worse than a half-Nelson, because the grip that they've got him into, I believe, is called the gooseneck. Which is where the hand is sort of bent over in a bird's neck type shape, but in a completely, you know, awkward position.
Wow.
But the worry is, first of all, it's a very painful wrist lock to be in, speaking from personal experience. But also, if you're in the middle of a swelling crowd of bodies, all you need is a slight shift of balance on the person holding it, and you get a noise like a handful of HB pencils being broken in half. It's not... There may be something I don't know about this young man and what he said or what he did. I genuinely don't know. I can't imagine that it's anything more than, yay, we've just won the game.
Hmm.
And then he's stuck in a wrist lock like that. It seemed massive overkill.
It does. And remarkable then response from the steward with the initial charge that Aguero had assaulted him.
Yes, I wonder what changed in between him making that allegation and him withdrawing that allegation, apart from the sudden unexpected appearance of some really clear video footage. I'm sure it can't have been that. Only a cynic would think it was that.
Yeah, it was right, because Aguero was trying to defuse the situation. Mm. He actually went over, picked the policeman's helmet up, was kind of really calm, and then he saw what was happening to the young fan, and he was just saying, look, this calmed down. And I think there was a reaction from the steward, and Aguero reacted. He should have walked away from there. It took up the policeman to get him away from the situation. But people said, oh, he's frustrated because he was on the bench. It was absolute nonsense.
He was intervening.
He was just trying to calm the situation down, because it was a joyous situation from his point of view.
Yeah, and City fans, I'm sure, will love him even more because of it. Nathaniel Westwood says, should Sergio Aguero intervene to stop other fans suffering? Perhaps at Arsenal. What did you make of Man City then, Michael?
Well, I think by far the best part of Manchester City's play was that wonderful David Silva assist, which I'm sure you would have particularly appreciated, James.
I find it amazing how he can lay that ball through with just the right amount of pace for Gabriel Jesus to run onto.
Yeah, for a straight pass for a first-time finish like that is quite impressive. The thing I liked about Manchester City was the debut of Benjamin Mendy, left back. I don't think he was fully fit. I didn't think we saw him scampering up and down as much as we will. But there was a pass he played to Jesus, more of a cross, I guess, that Jesus missed at the far post. And that's what Mendy's so good at. He gets into those crossing positions, but he really picks out passes. He did it so much for Monaco last season on their run to the Champions League semi-final. And I think more so than Kyle Walker. Kyle Walker's a very good player, great athleticism. I think his crossing isn't great, his final delivery isn't great. Mendy's so intelligent, he's almost like a playmaker in that situation.
Yeah, if that's Mendy not fit, I'd shudder to think what he's like at 100%, because he was brilliant. There were 20 minutes at the end of that first half where that was Manchester City, as they're supposed to be. If they can do that for longer than 20 minutes, they're going to be one hell of a side.
Are they going to be as good as Man United, who are doing it and just keep on doing it? 2-0 this weekend, and still no goals conceded, and Zlatan set to enter the mix now after his after his signing up for a new deal?
I no-brainer for me. I don't know why people have got a problem with it. You know, he's going to be hopefully be fit for Man United's perspective in around January when the Champions League really does kick in. By that time, I think Man United would have settled, which they've settled very nicely, but I think they'd be even more settled. And, you know, there's always clubs looking for a striker in the January window. Well, they've already signed one. So I think it's a great move. For Man United, the way they played, even though it was 0-0, as soon as Rashford came on, you thought, yeah, something's going to happen. You know, Rashford comes off the bench, scores. It was Martial the week before. And when Fellaini comes off the bench and your manager's telling you to just get back and sit in front in the back four, and then he's in the six-yard box and he sticks in the back of the net, you know that things are going quite swimmingly.
I thought this game was quite interesting because Leicester played as Leicester always do. They're really, really narrow. And what Mourinho doesn't have that he clearly wanted is a real flying winger. He tried for Perisic again and again. In fact, Perisic assisted a goal later that evening for Inter with a kind of classic go down the line and cut the ball in. And I think that might be United's weakness unless they get someone else in. Rashford came on and provided that directness. But again, he's not really a winger. He's more of a forward playing out wide.
If you were going to back one of the two Manchester sides, Michael, which one would it be?
I think I'd still back City because I think they've got a lot of players that are going to get better, and I think the more they play under Guardiola, the more they'll combine well. But
right, but so don't defences win you championships?
To a certain extent, yeah. But I mean, there's no doubt United have looked better so far. But yeah, I think City will improve at the back as well. Personally, I think they have to put someone in front of the defence who's going to stay there, a little bit like Arsenal says.
You think that, but will Pep do that?
If he saw the way that Otamendi and company constantly came out and were fouling people again and again and both almost trying to get themselves booked, then I think he'll maybe rejig things.
I went for Man City at the start of the season, but having watched Man United, I think Bailly and Jones have been exceptional. They're both quick, they're both strong, they both tackle well, and with the best goalkeeper in the league behind them as well, you've got to say that Man United are in with a hell of a chance. So you know, I'm favouring Man City because that was what I went for at the start of the season. But having watched United and the way Mourinho operates, they've got a great chance.
This is a game they would have drawn last season. And it's typically the kind of game they only got a point from last season at home, and they dropped so many points like that for, you know, not being as efficient early on in the game, and then towards the end getting frustrated and not being clinical enough. And it seemed that this season they've improved massively on that as well.
All right, company's fit. Now, I don't know whether that's the crucial difference. Ian, final thought on City?
I think City are probably the more exciting, expressive, maybe even better team, but Mourinho's got Man United at full Sun Tzu. First, remove the possibility of defeat. That's they're not going to make many mistakes.
Totally Football Show at Jazz FM. Michael, you know some jazz players, am I right?
Well, actually, a team in the second division in Finland. There's FC Jazz, who are from the city of Pori, which hosts a big jazz festival every year. They're actually managed by a Welshman.
Is that
right? A guy called John Allen. And their last European appearance was the Intertoto Cup in 2001. They were knocked out to PSG from a hat-trick by Laurent Robert, formerly of Newcastle.
No way. Can I ask, why do they call themselves FC Jazz? Is there...
Well, I assume this is... I mean, the jazz festival is quite big there.
Ah, right.
So I assume it's related to that, but it's a slightly strange thing to be named after rather than the city of Pori.
All right. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for that. What's that little palate cleanser? Should we just do the remaining Premier League games? You had Watford-Brighton 0-0. Brighton yet to score a goal this season, averaging two shots on target per game. This might be all very familiar to Norwich fans, I'm thinking, Ian.
Yeah. No goals yet. We did talk about this on a couple of shows back, didn't we? Chris Hughton in the Premier League.
Whether or not that disappointing point from Watford's point of view was down to the extraordinary Britos red card for his kind of knockout on knockout. What was stupider this weekend, that or the Mitrovic elbow?
I think the Britos one was the most potentially harmful. I mean, that's how you break up old furniture in the back garden to get it down to a bin size. If Knockhart's foot had been standing, they'd still be reattaching his leg right now.
Lira, when was the last time you saw a challenge like that?
In the 1980s.
Really?
yeah, that was kind of... Yeah, it was... the thing is, he was complaining to the referee, so he didn't touch him afterwards. It's ridiculous. And when you see that and somebody getting sent off, then you see Sterling getting sent off for a yellow card, you think, oh, the game's all wrong. That's a 10-game ban at least. Mm. And then you're right, Brighton should have gone on and won the game. But the problem is, they've only got one fit striker. Glenn Murray's out for 3 months. Hemed was their only fit striker. They didn't have a striker on the bench. I think Drawina failed a medical. They're not signing him. So they're desperately scrabbling around for a striker, Brighton. And if they don't get one before the transfer window, you've got to be concerned about it.
Mm. 0-0 as well between Huddersfield and Saints, which means that David Wagner's side have now not chopped their third straight clean sheet. Very impressive from them. Mitrovic didn't receive any sanction, but one imagines will receive some kind of retrospective ban for that elbow during the win by Newcastle over West Ham. Are things looking up for Newcastle?
Yeah, absolutely. I did feel that get a full house in St James's Park behind them and shout their troubles away, they're probably going to be all right. But then West Ham are a very giving team. How many goals is that now? That's 10 goals in 3 games, I think. Yeah. They're in all sorts of bother. And we've been saying it, for 9 months now. You can't see what the plan is there. Mm. You can't see what Bilic is trying to do. You can't really make sense of the recruitment. There doesn't seem to be any kind of overarching plan. And
some of the recruitment, I thought, seemed quite good.
I think they're good players, but yeah. I just don't know where they're fitting in, what the actual plan is. And I think he's in a lot of bother. Yeah. There's a lot of talk that West Ham might be sniffing around Ivanovic at Fulham.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a manager who... not only has got Fulham playing some really nice, effective stuff, they had a bit of a wobbly start to the season, albeit, but he's also a manager who can keep his nerve in difficult situations off the pitch, where he's had to work with a kind of confusing power structure with the owner's son and his mate coming in above him. So he seems someone you would trust if, I don't know, the owner's son was kind of partial to social media or something like that. You know,
interesting.
The thing with West Ham is they're fantastic on paper. Zabaleta, you wouldn't argue, but Irish best days behind him. When they Font, we all thought was a great signing. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in the side yesterday. Not sure why he wasn't in the side, but in the West Ham shirt, he's looked lacking.
And Chicharito
yeah. is 29-30 now as well. But yeah, I think that's a terrific signing, by the way, terrific signing. But they lack legs. You know, they lacked energy, they lacked legs. And he looks at the Newcastle side, by the way, which is so young. I was looking at their team. You know, Shelby was captain, was 25. Lascelles was 23. Richie, Gale, Mankio. These are all very young.
What about Marino?
Marino, I think he's looked terrific. Mm. Last week, I thought, there's something about him. He looked classy, he looked comfortable on the ball. There's always something nice about a left footer as well in the centre midfield. So you can see why Rafa wants money, because if he can get a couple of experience players to go with that group of very young players, you can see why they'll be on the right tracks. But from West Ham's point of view, it's got to happen now, because there isn't any long-term future with those players. Mm. And that's the problem for Slaven. With the players that he signed, I know it's 3 away games because of the World Championships at the Olympic Stadium, but he had to hit the ground running. He's in the last year of his contract, and you know they were looking at Jokanovic last season as well. It was always in the back of their mind.
Right, okay. Crystal Palace. Defeated at home by Swansea. Swansea scoring 2 goals with their only 2 shots they've had this season. We're talking about gorgeous breakaway goals. That was lovely, where Carl Norton robbed... Who was the player he robbed?
Martin Kelly. Yeah.
There you go. And sets up Jordan Ayew.
Yeah, amazingly, I didn't even think it was Martin Kelly's worst defending of the game, because his defending for the first goal was... I mean, genuinely amongst the weirdest defending I've ever seen. He just... didn't try and get goal side of Abraham and kept on pulling him back. It was
there's just so much on that game. We've said sort of at the start of the season, they're going to take time, very different style of play, they're going to need to adjust. But this was so much more profound than that. It's not just a question of getting used to tactics. They look absolutely lost, devoid of confidence. I don't know if they're confused about what they should be doing, or they just don't want to be doing what they're told they should be doing. But out of possession, they're utterly passive, letting a team like Swansea just dominate them. I think they must have had a better part of 2/3 of possession in that first half. They just could pass at their own pace, and Palace did nothing. And when they did have the ball, you couldn't see the runs. There was no, barely any movement. There's something deeply wrong there, and I'm not even remotely surprised that there's talk of maybe De Boer going already.
He lasted 85 days at Inter, famously, which seemed like a very short time, but maybe won't after he's finished at Palace.
But he did some weird things with Inter in terms of you know, tactical things and the choices of the players. And you did think at the time, okay, you know, he got there really late. He couldn't really sign the players he wanted. He had to deal with the squad. And you thought, okay, this time, let's see what he does. And then he put Townsend playing off Benteke, where you know exactly what Townsend can only do one thing, and everybody knows it. And yeah, he tried to reinvent him in that position where he looked lost, I thought. And you're just thinking, like, what are you doing? Really, what are you doing? It's just not, it makes no sense.
I think, point it in simple terms, I think Palace have gone from a side under Sam Allardyce who've been coached without the ball for the major part. This is what we're going to do. When we lose the ball, this is what we're going to do. When we get it, it's going to go there. We might lose possession, but this is how we're going to get it back. With Frank de Boer, it's about, when we get the ball, this is what we're going to do. And I don't think the players want to do it. I really do. It's funny when you try and teach players something that they don't want to do, you put them in an uncomfortable situation. And all those Palace players look uncomfortable with what they're trying to do. With Sam Allardyce, they look comfortable, they look happy. Get on the front foot. Let's get the ball back.
Ian and Michael are going for this. Who's going to get the first?
You first, go on.
I was just going to say, I think it was Milivojevic after the game. Because at half-time, they switched to a back four and they started going a lot longer. And Milivojevic was quite pointedly saying, we were much better after the change. We play much better like that. As if trying to send some kind of coded message I couldn't decipher.
I think the worrying thing for Palace is there's certain managers you can bring in at this point and you know are going to keep you up. But they've been through Pulis and they've been through Allardyce. So you wonder where they're going to look for next.
Well, after three rounds of action then and heading into the international break, the bottom three, Leroy, are West Ham,
Crystal Palace and Bournemouth, or with nil point.
Nil point. All right. Well, we'll be heading down to the Championship ourselves after this. All right then, Ian. We haven't got long, but why don't you round up all the crazy action that's happened in the Football League over the weekend?
Hey, it has been crazy.
Has it?
Too. Yeah.
The starting league too. What's the craziest thing?
The craziest thing? Well, there was a crazy game in the West Country.
All right.
Exeter are leading the way in League Two after a dramatic game. Paul Tisdale's side were 2-0 down and came back to win 4-3 over Cheltenham. So that was pretty crazy. What's even crazier is Newport County, who you may remember were basically relegated in last April. And then Michael Flynn, their midfielder, came in to take over, had a dramatic survival at the end of the season. They're in second place now.
What?
They laid a new £750,000 pitch at the magnificently named Rodney Parade and then got a 4-1 win, so capped off there. And Harry Kewell's Crawley, they're against top of the table Swindon. They hadn't won a single game. They won 3-0. And so good news for him. In League One, Peterborough, leading the way, 4-1 away at Northampton, for whom manager Justin Edinburgh is in a lot of trouble. Peterborough have a 100% record and they're averaging 3 goals a game.
Only two teams in the Football League still have a 100% record.
Hey, we're coming to one of them soon, but only after Walt Disney's Portsmouth, who are very lucky to get away from Wigan with a point. And probably the most exciting game was the 6-goal thriller in the Estuary Derby, as Southend United beat Gillingham 3-3. That's a moral victory, obviously, because we're not from Gillingham. In the Championship, there's your other 100% record, Neil Warnock. 2-1 win for Cardiff over QPR. 5 from 5 and 3 points clear because they've shaken off Ipswich, whose manager Mick McCarthy said after the game, call the police, there's been a murder.
What?
That's how much Fulham beat them. It was only 2-0, but Ipswich just weren't in it. And that was Fulham's first win of the season. And if we're having a competition for who's had the worst weekend in that division, it's a three-way tussle. Sunderland battered 3-0 by Barnsley. Mm. Norwich ripped asunder by Millwall 4-0.
Ooh.
And Birmingham lost at home to Reading. A defeat that saw Redknapp roast his own players again.
Wow. All right. Leeds are still undefeated. They're up to third, aren't they? They beat Forest 2-0.
Yeah, three away wins now.
Well, that's impressive. You mentioned Fulham. They were excitedly tweeting the fact that they had a 2-0 win over Southampton's under-18 side. Did you see this, Michael? The second goal was a penalty, and it was scored by Nicholas Santa Claus.
Marvellous.
No, genuinely, that's his name. Nicholas Santos. It's Santos Claus, but, that's, you know.
Brilliant.
That's nice, isn't it? Mm. We seem to have come to the end of our Football League allotted time. If only we could find a little bit more space to explore all the many things going on in that wonderful series of divisions, Ian?
Well, you know what they say. If you close your eyes and wish very hard and then open them up and send lots of tweets indicating some form of public demand, you never know what might happen.
Are you proposing that there might be some kind of Football League podcast?
Some kind of exclusively Football League podcast? Maybe.
All right, I'm going to be watching this space. Right now, let me ask you this question. Michael Cox, Yoram Lechin says, is Belotti the real deal?
Oh, that was a great goal.
Did you see his goal?
Oh, absolutely incredible
goal. Was that the goal of the weekend?
Oh, I think so, yeah. It wasn't even a bicycle kick, was it? Because he didn't do the first leg, if that makes sense. Uh-huh. He just kind of flew through the air, connected right into the top corner.
It was a Japanese manga goal.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just astonishing. Monaco have got a lot of cash in their pocket, and they're going to be looking for a striker, and it closes the transfer window on Thursday. Is Belotti on their list?
He is, of course he is. The only problem they have is the resale value, because obviously the whole business plan is you buy a player like Tomalema for €4 million, then you sell him for a team like Liverpool, who've just made another bid for him, for €80 million. That's the idea.
Right.
If you buy Belotti for €100 million...
Yeah, which is the buyout clause.
Yeah, which is the buyout clause, so you'll have to pay that. He's still very young, but how much more will he get for, you know, if they win the Champions League with him, yeah, okay, you can maybe sell for 150, but it's still not really the idea of, like, so that's why they were more keen on someone like Dolberg at Ajax, for example, because you get him for 40 or 50, but potentially you could very quickly go up to 80, 90 and be sold to an English club. With Belotti, might be a bit tricky, but Dolberg is not anymore on their list. Belotti is still on the list, so if I was a Torino fan, I would still be a little bit worried. Not too worried, a little bit worried.
Okay. 100 million is a Belotti. Hey, Serie A, we're going to do a nice roundup on Thursday. Loads of goals. Just to put it in perspective, there were 20 scored in the Premier League this weekend. 32 in Italy. It's the kind of stat I trot out only when there's been more.
Same in Ligue 1 as well.
Oh, yeah. What did you get in Ligue 1?
A lot in Ligue 1. Can't remember exactly. We're on 111 in four match days. Yeah, it's
okay,
incredible.
Well, that's been boosted enormously by Monaco's performance, which we mentioned back at the start. Let's talk about their clash with Olympique Marseille and just generally what's going on down in the Principality. Marseille manager Rudy Garcia saying before the game, the last two times against them we conceded four, so it can't go worse than that.
Love it.
And they lost 6-1.
And Rudy Garcia, for people who, you know, he's not at all arrogant and he's not at all cocky and he's not at all opening his mouth for nothing, but he did this time. No, he is really arrogant. And that was clearly...
We got that.
Yeah, no, And everybody who was watching that press conference thought, you know, it could still get worse because...
There's loads of other big numbers out there.
Yeah, and Monaco looked very strong since the beginning. It's not like if Monaco were coming out of three defeats or two draws and one win or a bit shaky because there's no Mbappe and no Bakayoko and no Silva and no Mendy. They still look very strong. Hmm. So potentially you could get battered.
Right. It defies logic, this, Julien, because as you say, Mendy's gone, Bakayoko, Silva. Mbappe's been on the bench and is now... Well, touch on this in a second, but he's effectively out of the picture. Yeah. How are they able to get off to what is, I think, their best start ever?
Four wins in four. 16 wins in a row now in the league, which no one has never done before.
Yeah.
The amazing things, and you need to give them a lot of credit for the scouting network they have and the sporting director, because take someone like Ronnie Lopez. So Bernardo Silva goes. It was maybe the best player in Ligue 1 for the last two seasons. He was amazing. He goes and you think, that right-hand side, it's not going to be the same. Ronnie Lopez, who was at Manchester City and then was on loan from Monaco to Lille, when they were 15, they were playing the same team, Bernardo Silva and Ronnie Lopez, both for Portugal and for Benfica youth teams. And Ronnie Lopez was way better than Bernardo Silva. There was no one at that time could have thought Bernardo Silva is the one who's going to be better at 22 or 23. They got Ronnie Lopez, and I can tell you now, Lopez is going to have a great season because that's what Jardim does. Jardim improves you in a way that not many managers do, and he's going to make him another Bernardo Silva in the way that he arrives. He's good, but there's still a lot of work to be done, and at the end of the season, it's going to be fantastic. And yesterday, he was outstanding.
Right.
That's what they're good at. That's what they do.
And Falcao has done brilliantly since his return there.
Yes, 7 goals in the first 4 matches, 4 league games this season. Djibril Cissé was the last one to do that 20 years ago or something. No one has scored more. Cavani's on 5, for example, which is great already in 4, but 7 in 4. And he's just, he looked outstanding, his movement off the ball. I mean, If you're a coach or if you're a young player, just watch Falcao play. If you're a young striker or you want to be a striker, just watch him play, because he's 31 and yeah, he's not the quickest and he's not, you know, the most skillful either. But he's just a wonderful player to watch, because he just he has it all mentally in terms of intelligence of playing.
Mm. Monaco, the reigning French champions, what are their chances of hanging on to that title?
I think it's going to be hard though, because...
Because the squad's thinner? Because
yeah, because it's not so much, but if Falcao has a bit of a deeper form, then behind him, he's still very young. Okay, if you get Belotti or someone like that, it's a different story. But right now, PSG are looking so strong everywhere, in terms of depth, in terms of the momentum, in terms of the character they have, even in terms of the players they have. And Monaco is still great, but you still have those young players at left back. Jorge, for example, the Brazilian left back, was great yesterday, but if you put him against, in a much tougher environment against a much better team than Marseille, he might struggle. He will struggle, and you still think they might come just short a little bit. But you know, they did miracles last season, so why not again?
Right. Okay. Has the Mbappe deal? What's the situation there? Is that confirmed? How far are we away from that going through? Is there any doubt about it?
No. I don't think so. No, they will go for it on a loan basis. No. Mandatory signing at the end of the loan, which apparently at the beginning Monaco wanted. So you get him on loan, but you have to pay the 180 million next summer.
Mm.
That's not the case anymore, although it looks...
So they're just loaning Paris Saint-Germain their number one transfer
player. Yeah, officially it's only a loan.
Yeah.
Like any loans that you could do.
Uh-huh.
However, it looks like there's an unofficial agreement that they will pay the money anyway, even if they don't have to. It looks like they will pay the money next summer.
Do you think there's a fee? There'd be a fee attached to that loan. What would the fee be?
No fee
at all.
So the reason for all of this is so that Paris Saint-Germain can get around the financial fair play regulations.
Yeah.
And UEFA, do you think UEFA are just going to sit back and go, yeah, fair enough, you managed to beat us on a technicality, or what?
There's nothing they can do on the loan. That's nothing. What we don't know yet is how the structure of his... wages, are going to be taken, because obviously he's on 16 a week at Monaco, but the new deal he's going to get at PSG, which can't be applied now because he's basically still a Monaco player on loan to another club, is worth 18 million a year. So, you know, the increase in terms of salary is huge. So that's what we're not sure about. But in terms of the loan, financial fair play can't do anything. So they will have to focus on Neymar. And PSG believe that with the players they're selling or sold already, plus the new deals they're going to get, like the one with Nike, it's going to be huge.
Hmm.
They will cover for Neymar and then think about Mbappe for next season.
But Mbappe will be arriving this season.
Today,
this,
yeah.
Yeah, today, okay. And Cavani, does that mean he's going to be leaving this week?
No. They're going to play together. The whole idea and how they seduced the Mbappe camp, because Mbappe's mum and dad are his agent, is that from the beginning they said, we want you to play with Neymar and Cavani. And Mbappe, as much as he loves Real Madrid, PSG, this is his club. You know, it's his hometown. It's the prodigy coming home. You know, three times they tried to sign him when he was 9, when he was 14. They failed, and today they're managing it. But the idea for him, that really, really, the appeal was to play with Neymar and Cavani up front.
Wow.
So whether they play 3 up front, whether they play 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1, it remains to be seen exactly where he's going to play. But they sold him the project, it would be you, Cavani and Neymar up front for PSG all season.
Mm. Do you trust Unai Emery to get this right?
I do. And I think he played a big part, because they had dinner together in June in Paris. And Emery said, basically, it was like a, I love you. It was a declaration of love. It was like, I love you. You are amazing. And at the time, there was no Neymar involved at all.
Mm.
And Emery said, you and Cavani up front would be fantastic. And then add Neymar on top of that. And the kid was just like, I want to go home.
Yeah, it's hard to turn down a bid like that. I always remember Silvio Berlusconi winning the hand of... he was quite given to flamboyant gestures. When he signed Gigi Lentini, remember he turned up with a helicopter and everyone went, oh, it's Berlusconi in a helicopter. I think Lentini was kind of swept off his feet with that. But... Ruud Gullit, that Berlusconi left the table, went to the piano and played La Vie en Rose, because Berlusconi was a former cruise ship entertainer. True story. So he played La Vie en Rose to Ruud Gullit, and Ruud, there's no way he could have said no. Leroy, when you were snapped up by all the many clubs who've snapped you up over the years, did anyone ever kind of sweeten the deal with a little bit of a...
Yeah, Jimmy Hill. When I went back, I was at QPR and I went back to Fulham, and Jimmy Hill took me to a little restaurant on the other side of the Putney Bridge.
Oh, yeah, which one?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Still there?
I don't know, because I don't live in London anymore. So, and he took us out to dinner, and me and my ex-wife now, we were sat there, and Jimmy was great, and he swept us off his feet. We were always going back. But then we realised when we came away that we were both kind of rubbing our chins all the time because of his chin. I was good mates with Jimmy, but we were giggling. I said, "Well, you're rubbing your chins." He said, "Well, so are you." It's kind of just something you do when you were with Jimmy Hill. You just kind of you rubbed your chin. But I signed for him, and he was happy.
All right,
it's all good.
All right, nice one. More from you to come, Jules, on Thursday. Quickly to finish with one or two other bits of European news. Ooh, quite a stunning brace from Marco Asensio to spare Real Madrid's blushes as they managed a 2-2 draw with Valencia Sunday night. There's been some suggestion that Arsenal were trying to claw the cash together to try and buy out Marco Asensio. Everyone's just laughing at me as I say this. Shall I move on? Yeah. All right, then. Great brace from Corky in Atletico Madrid's 5-1 win at Las Palmas. Messi had a brace at Alaves. The other interesting thing about that game was the fact that a certain Enzo Zidane came on and made his Alaves Liga debut. How about that? Usman Dembele, that's what I wanted to ask you, Jules.
Yeah.
Usman Dembele signing for Barcelona. Another Parisian kid, yeah? Yeah.
Who was a bit south.
Oh, a little.
Yeah, a little bit south.
He was at Rennes, and then he went to... And then Borussia Dortmund were the lucky team that snapped him up. Is he what Barcelona need? Is he going to become an absolutely colossal superstar?
I think so, yeah. I think he will need a bit of time to adapt to the way... you play at Barca, which is very different than the way he was playing at Dortmund, where everything was going through him and he could basically do whatever he wanted with the ball. That's the freedom he had there. At Barca, obviously the ball doesn't come to you first. You may be the third choice after Messi and Suarez, for example. And when you have it, you have to be careful of what you're doing. So I just hope they don't take away the craziness he has in his game, which is unpredictable, which is why he's so good.
Going to be interesting to see how that works out. Juve drew Barcelona in the Champions League draw. You probably saw Francesco Totti having a giggle about that. He was laughing rather less this Saturday evening when Inter came to the Stadio Olimpico with Roma's former manager, Luciano Spalletti, and performed something of a smash and grab. Totti was taking selfies with Kevin Spacey in the tribuna there. But we'll have a proper rundown on the Serie A weekend with James Horncastle on Thursday. But is there anything else you want to add at this point?
Can I just say that I went to a non-league game on Saturday, Kingstonian against Leatherhead, and fulfilled a lifetime ambition where the ball went into the stands and I headed it back onto the pitch.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was great. Deflected off a tree on my way to heading it. But nevertheless.
You did.
A tree in the stand.
Oh, the ball. Yeah. The ball. Yeah, sorry, yeah. Right, okay. Yeah. So you were sitting in the stands and the ball was kind of... took us through this
took
tree.
Winger went down
did
the line.
Did time slow down, first of all?
I think the ball hitting the tree was what it made slow down. Right, but yeah. Okay. Now, winger went down the line, shaped across, fullback blocked it up in the air, deflected off a branch, straight onto my head. It was great feeling.
Right. And did you notice anyone from either of the clubs turning around and kind of making a note? No?
Sadly not. I don't think it was on camera either. Sadly. Oh,
were you forced to go or did you actually go?
For pleasure.
Forced
to
Shouldn't I've been to two National League games myself this season. They'd be
but you were
fun.
You were forced to go for financial reasons.
Nobody forces Jimbo to do anything, Julien.
That's off the back of that, when you mentioned Kingstonian, I played my one game as a professional in goal against Kingstonian.
Oh, right.
For Gloucester City. I was player manager, our goalkeeper, Dave Coles, got injured in the warm-up, and I played in goal. We won 3-1, and I conceded the penalty. That's the only time I've played in goal as a footballer.
Did you make any saves?
No, it was amazing. It's a long time ago, now that you remember.
All right, then. Cheers, everyone, then, for joining us today. Julien, Ian, Leroy and Michael. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll be hearing from you, Julien, then. Also a bit of James Horncastle, Andy Brassell and Raphael Honigstein. It's going to be a big Euro special. Hopefully Euro planning to be with us, etc. and so on. That's it for today. Bye for now.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and tweet us @thetotallyshow.